What's going on, everybody? It's be your boy DJ Anonymous with Sports Biz Music, the podcast, episode 106. And I got a very, very special guest on the show today. I have Miss Liz Marie on the show today. How you doing?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. You know, it was raining a lot earlier in Miami. Miami's weather is very bipolar, so, you know, it's... It's crazy.
Send me some of this LA sunshine we got.
Yeah, like, you know, like I said, like, LA, like, weather is, like, it's nothing compared, like, to, like, Miami. Like, last year I went around, like, June? And it was, like, cool at night. I'm like,
yep.
I forgot, like, this is 56 degrees at night. I wish we could get that weather over here. You know?
Yeah, so. We sleep good in the summer.
So, but before we get into the questions and everything, you know, introduce yourself to the people.
Sure. So my name is Liz. Marie is my last name. I gotta correct people on that all the time. And I'm a brand strategy consultant. So I help businesses grow, clarify their message, reach more clients, better connect with their clients, stand out from their competition. It's something I'm really passionate about because I feel that my purpose is to help other people grow, inspire them, empower them to reach their highest potential. So that's how I do it. But I'm really excited to talk with you today because I'm a hooper. I grew up playing ball. I love sport. I love music. So what I want to talk about.
Yeah, that's what's up. So. Before we get into all that, like, what made you want to, you know, get into, being a strategist? Because I seen, as you said, that you've been working on PowerPoint pretty much your whole life, so.
Yeah. So, it's funny. I kind of fell into it, and it's one of those things that just life works out the way it's supposed to. So, I'm a very curious person. I love school. I love to learn. And I've wanted to be like every career you can imagine. So I actually went to school. I got into UCLA as a part of Air Force ROTC. And I wanted to go to armed services. I wanted to be a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny in just like 1 year how your life could change because I didn't get medically cleared.
Right.
Because I have asthma and it was kind of a fluke. So
yeah, me too.
No more Air Force. Yeah, it's crazy. And then, you know, I did pre-med for a year, and I was like, this sucks. Like, I'm used to getting A's without trying is really what it was. And I had to maybe apply myself more than I wanted to. UCLA's medical program is crazy. Like, everyone fails the test.
Mm-hmm.
You get, like, a high grade of, like, a 38. It's just ridiculous. And I was like, you know, I don't care about this enough to put in that level of work. I still want to have a life. So I kind of guessed at like what a new direction would be.
Mm-hmm.
I looked at all the different majors and I found communication and it kind of sounded cool. I thought I would explore it. And at the same time, I applied for an internship as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just something I always knew I could do. I was always creative. I wrote poetry and did a lot of creative writing growing up. So I use like my graduation speech as a writing sample.
Mm-hmm.
And I started this marketing agency. And at the time, I didn't even know what marketing was at all. He gave me a book the first day. My old boss, Matt Bernini, shout out. Because he really changed my life. And after a month, he hired me. And I worked there for 2 years. I was our third employee. We grew to be like a 15-person agency. Big, you know, billion-dollar clients, really, really high-end branding.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this really rare opportunity where he saw something in me and trusted me to learn as I went.
Mm-hmm.
So I started as a writer. I learned about brand strategy and messaging for brands.
Mm-hmm.
I learned design and even web development. And so by the end, I moved into like a creative direction role where I was defining the strategy both on the message and how to position a brand so that they connect with their customers, but also what does it look like? What is the what are the colors, what's the logo, like what's the whole art direction for the brand. And it was just super fun.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would kind of lead a team through the whole process. And after a while, it was like my next step. I just needed something new. I had stopped learning. You know, if you work in a small environment with the same people for 10 years, you can only learn so much from them.
Yeah, it gets kind of like repetitive after a while.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm big on pushing myself. I've realized lately that as soon as I get... I get to this point where I'm like, oh, I'm good, or good,
mm-hmm.
without even realizing it, I have to fuck it up and do something new.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Like, yeah, and I don't realize I'm doing it in the moment, but I just need a challenge. So I left and I took a job in-house as a creative director, which is what I thought I had always wanted. And it's, you know, it's been great. Ultimately, I realize that the strategy part of the role is what I'm best at,
mm-hmm.
and what maybe is more unique. It's harder to be good at, in my opinion.
Right.
It's where I can add the most value for other people. Because there are a ton of like really talented designers,
right.
like, you know, thousands. I mean, even I could put you in because I know a lot. But I think there are fewer strategists who understand the creative. Can put all the pieces together and make it really clear and simple.
Right.
That's my long roundabout answer.
So like, what's the day to day, you know, duties as a strategist? Because, you know, people don't realize, you know, especially like us folk that's in branding and marketing and doing everything behind the scenes, like. It's a lot of work. People think it's yeah. easy. Like it's a hassle. Like even to get clients to bid into to what you offer, like it's a lot. You know.
Yeah. You have, you know, of course you have all the traditional challenges of a business. So like you said, especially a business,
mm-hmm.
you know, business owner. So marketing, getting clients, servicing clients. Putting out proposals, all of that actually a lot of other, you know, entrepreneurs can relate to. But the actual role itself, as far as how I serve my clients,
right.
Is often on a project basis. And it usually starts with facing some type of challenge in their business. And it might be that they're not growing the way they want to be growing.
Right.
It might be that they're just starting out and really just not sure where to start. Usually there's a lot of confusion,
mm-hmm.
Uncertainty, frustration. It's just not working the way they want it to work. And, you know, for anyone with that own business or is really high up and kind of invest so much of themselves into it, it sucks. It's a really frustrating place to be in, you know, if you feel lost or you're not getting the results you want, because it's very personal.
Mm-hmm.
So my approach is to do a lot of research first. So I research everything I need to know about my client's business. Usually then I do a bunch of interviews one-on-one with right. all of the stakeholders and ask everything I can about, you know, why they exist, where they want to go, what makes them special, what's the culture of the company, what are their strengths, and their own understanding of who their customer or their client is.
Right.
And then if they'll let me, I'll actually talk to their customers or their clients, whether that's with interviews or surveys, so I can hear firsthand, like, what do you guys want? What do you care about? Why did you choose this person, this business? And it's funny how much you learn from doing that, because usually the client or the end customer will say something about the business didn't even recognize themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally I'll look at their competitors, so I'll see, like, who is your most direct competitor, who's an aspirational competitor that's maybe much bigger than you,
mm-hmm.
that is somewhere you want to, you know, aspire to. And I'll look at, let's say, 5 to 10 of them, and I'll analyze everything they're doing in marketing and branding. What's their message? Who are they talking to? How do they structure their products or their services? to try to find gaps and opportunities. You know, so let's say that 9 out of 10 I'm doing it this way, that means there's a gap in doing it the other way.
So you pretty much dissect the whole company then, like you pretty much break down from inside out and also the competition, correct?
Yeah, exactly. Because the goal really in a effective strategy for a brand, and for those who know, which is maybe a lot of people, because I didn't realize this before I got into the space, people think of a brand as a logo.
Right.
Often, you know, but really your brand is every single thing, or is influenced by every single thing your company does, because a brand is how your customer or how someone feels about your business.
Right.
So there's thousands of things that shape that feeling. So it's a lot to factor in. So the real sweet spot is that you want it to be something that's true to who your company really is.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got to be authentic. It's got to feel like you. It has to be something that your customers actually want to care about. Because you can create a really cool brand or really cool offer, and if it isn't something that's relevant to your customer, it's not going to sell.
Right.
And then the third thing is that it also has to do all of that while being unique from your competitors, and you have to stand out. So I think of those as like three intersecting circles, and you want to be that sweet spot right in the middle.
Yeah, because, you know, especially now, you know, it's 2019 going to 2020, and you're hearing about all these analytics about, like, in the next 20, 30 years, like, you know, more people's going to get into more of freelance work, and,
mm-hmm.
and for us, like, you know, it's going to be more competitive. Like, you have, you know, us as millennials, and then you got the next generation and the generation after that, which, you know, I always tell people, you know, in our generation, they think that, you know, we was built with the technology already established, but the technology was testing it on us and the generation mm-hmm. before. And for the generation that's coming up, like these kids, like I always remind them, I keep saying it, but you know, if I had these investment apps and stuff like that, or these social media accounts that was fully established, you know, when I was in high school, like, I'd be a millionaire right now. You know, like, think about it. When YouTube came out, it was still, like, you know, people were testing it out. Twitter, Facebook wasn't as big. It was still growing. Only thing that we had was MySpace. But to me, MySpace really taught us how to just socialize and how to create and design. It didn't give us that... I guess that platform, if you're on Twitter, to express yourself even more, but also gain, you know, traffic and gain, you know, new relationships and stuff like that, you know.
Sure, yeah.
So that's why, like, you know, for me, I be watching ESPN every day, and they always say, oh, these millennials this and millennials that, but I'm like, if you want to put us on that, you could also talk about y'all generation, like, as far as, like, you know, the D Generation X, the Generation X generation, where, you know, they pretty much was, I've always felt like they was the ones who was the main reason why technology was really created, because they needed computers in order to email people and, you know, invest in stocks the easier way and things of that. Our generation just implemented, all right, that's what's the next level, and that's, you know, social media and texting and everything, like, but, like, I don't know, like, it's a lot, you know.
Well, it's interesting, because I think, first of all, people are resistant to change and always want to think of their own. Like, half of us in youth as a golden era. But I think, you know, you can't look at one side without the other. So, sure, there are negatives about technology and what it's done to our society. But there are also incredible things. And it has empowered consumers. It's empowered us with knowledge and awareness that is really transformational in our world. And even looking in terms of branding or trying to position yourself as a brand, a business, and stand out or reach newer audiences, it's really shifted kind of our economy in that things used to be a function and what features work and, you know, just how to get stuff done. But now it's really proven that people care about and want to put their money into businesses that share their values and have the same purpose, that do social good. And so that really gives you power both as a consumer to invest in things you believe in and support companies that you believe in. But then as a business, to really stand out based on what you want to put out there about your purpose, your values, and, you know, what you stand for.
Yeah, because, you know, even to piggyback to, you know, what you said, it's just a lot of competition. There's a lot of people that want to do the same stuff, and yeah, just for me, it don't really faze me, because at the end of the day, I was taught that you could be in the same industry, but if you have your own taste, you know, you'll go further, you know, as the next person. And, you know, even with the podcasting industry, like, it's still very new. Like, there's so many people coming out with podcasting. And I love it because, you know, when we was in school, podcasting wasn't how it is now. Like, podcasting, we had to listen to lectures and it was boring. But now, like, people created podcasts as if, you know, you listen to the radio. It's amazing how everything changed, but also change could still bring in not just the pros, but also the cons. But, you know, it's a lot.
Yeah, and I think on that note, I always believe that there's enough opportunity for everybody. I truly believe that. And the interesting thing about kind of how our society has shifted really as a result of technology is that I think there used to be a predominant view that there are only a handful of types of people, and media, for example, would cater to those types of people. Now, with the way we're able to share information, the way we're able to create community online, you can have a really, really niche interest and absolutely find people who share that niche interest and, you know, build a community around that, engage with them. So, I mean, you could have a podcast about, like, you know, the newest, coolest cat toys or something like really, really idiosyncratic that you would think isn't going to have a broad audience. But you're able, you have the power and the tools to find people. And so it's not like there has to be one voice or, you know, just a handful of media channels. There really is opportunity. And you can apply that to your business in a lot of different ways, too, is you don't have to be all things to all people. You can service a really specific niche. And that's actually a really powerful strategy, because you don't want to have thousands and thousands of people that you're talking to who don't care about you.
Right.
Effective. To talk to just a few hundred who really, really care about you. So it's a good metaphor, and it's just a positive outcome of how our times have changed with technology.
Yeah, because it changed a lot. Like, it's forcing people that wasn't as social to be more social, because, you know, even, like, the couple generations back, like, I have aunties and stuff that's baby boomers. And they have Facebook, you know. My aunt, one of my aunt, you know, her and my grandfather, they brothers and sisters, and they part of the traditionalist generation. And she has a Facebook, you know. So it's like, it's crazy how, like, you know, technology now is pretty much, is bridging the gap between the generations and stuff, and it's like, that's one of the pros I love about technology, is that it's just bridging that gap,
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, so.
Yeah, I think you hear a lot, and this happened in my own family. My stepdad did, I think it was Ancestry.com, one of those DNA tests, and found, you know, tons of family members. I think one of his relatives is adopted, so he kind of found this roundabout way to all of these relatives he never knew had, and was able to kind of experience this family experience he'd never had before. And like, I think a lot of people have that same effect, and it's just another example of how it brings people together in a way we never would have had before.
Right. Like, the other day, I just realized that my aunt, she was a Cowboys fan. So, because she was, you know, the Cowboys lost to the Saints, and, you know, she want to talk junk.
Happy about that.
Yeah, she want to talk junk about, you know, my Dolphins, which I tell people, my Dolphins, you know, I actually want them to lose this year. Like, me and my close friends, like, that's Dolphin fans, we came to a meeting and say, you know what? These 8-8, 7-9 seasons, I'd rather them just blow up the roster.
You're all for the tanking?
Yeah, just.
Well, last week I thought they were gonna maybe turn it around for the first little bit, but not so much.
Nah, when I remember when they was playing the Chargers, cause you know the Chargers was banged up,
and
I like, man, we may win, we may have a chance, but
yeah,
they got.
When I turned it on, y'all were up.
Yeah, but I like, nah, they got Phillip Rivers still. Phillip Rivers
right.
Is Phillip Rivers. To me, he's like this generation Dan Marino, you know, like that hockey throw, but, you know, he got over 55,000 yards career, so. But yeah, I was telling people, like, you know what? The Dolphins, they just got to rebuild. The Marlins, Derek Jeter, I love him as a player, but, you know, he got 3 more years. And the only hope we have is the hockey team, the Florida Panthers, and the Miami Heat. That's our only hope, you know, so, but yeah.
A little bit
of hope. So let's get into this, because since you're from L.A., and I think this is my second or third time using this because I had someone on the show. Shout out to Josiah. He was actually he actually produced. I don't know if you're familiar with a show called Legends of Chamberlain Heights. It's the show on like Comedy Central like last year, a couple years ago. Yeah. So like I had to ask him these questions because you know he's from LA and stuff like that. So. The first question is the Rams or the Chargers?
Do I have to pick one or can I say neither?
You don't like none of them?
Nah, it's not like I don't like them, but they're not my team.
Who's your team?
So, all right, we got to back up because I was raised in sports by my stepdad.
Okay.
And he was from LA and was very much anti every LA team.
Wow.
On principle.
We have that down here too.
He was like, you're a homer, don't be a homer. And so he liked teams and always had teams, but I never really cared for the teams he loved. He loved the Celtics, he liked the Eagles. I was just never into it. And so I never understood, like, my whole life, how you just pick a team like out of thin air and that's just your team. So I've never had a team in really any form. I'm a Dodgers fan, but
okay.
Other than that, like basketball, football, I never really had a team. So basketball, I'm an enormous LeBron fan, but I was always a Laker hater. Like, hated the Lakers all through the Kobe days. I just hated on them so much. Everything. I didn't want anything to do with it. I don't like Laker fans in general. But, of course, my favorite player has to come to my home team. And this coincides with my boyfriend, who I've been with for a while, is the biggest Lakers fan in the world. Like, has the Lakers logo tattooed on his back.
Like room full of Lakers stuff.
Every game. So he's turning the tide between LeBron and my boyfriend. I'm becoming a Lakers fan.
That's how it is. Imagine when y'all get married, you know.
It just gets that way, you know, and it's hard. It's like I feel like a hypocrite because I've hated for so long.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a process. I'm coming to terms with it. But then I've never had a football team either, and I'm really, really starting to get into watching football. Like, I grew up, it was always on. All my brothers played.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't usually sit and watch a game. Like, I would do homework, and it'd be on, and I'd kind of look up. But this past two seasons, this year and last year, I've really, like, prioritized it in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really getting into it. And so I'm just adopting... my best friend and my boyfriend both are Niners fans, so
oh, okay.
I'm going all in with the Niners. I'm just, you know, I never knew how you pick a team unless you're like a child and someone tells you who to like. So that's a whole phenomenon that's new to me.
Okay, yeah, because I mean, 49ers, you know, I call what's his name, Garoppolo? I got his nickname called Goop Head Is. It just go with it, you know what I'm saying? But yeah. 49ers, you know, they all right, you know.
We're doing all right.
Yeah, 3-0.
We're still undefeated, long yeah. You know, we're trying to hold on.
So,
but now I'm holding, I don't know if you saw, if you watch Undisputed with Skip and Shannon.
Oh, I love him every day.
Okay, so did you see the one where his wife came on?
Yeah.
And she talked about all of, like, the jinx rules that he has?
Mm-hmm.
So I watched that, and I realized, okay, this was the first two Niners games I watched them, and I wore some type of Niners gear while I watched.
Right.
And we won. So for the third game, I was like, well, I can't stop now. But I actually had a basketball game during the game.
Yeah.
So I had to put on, like, a bandana to wear because I just didn't want to be the jinx. So it's the things we do for sports.
Yeah, because, like, that's what me and my wife does. Like, especially because I began being – I love all my home teams. But, okay. You know, I grew up a Rams fan when they was in St. Louis, and mm-hmm. even to now. I grew up a Boston Red Sox fan because the reason why I became a Red Sox fan, I don't like nothing New York except for the Giants because they beat Brady twice. But
that's a good reason.
but when the Marlins wasn't always playing on Fox and stuff like that, so I remember when I was younger, they used to always show like the Subway Series or like the Red Sox or the Yankees games, or like sometimes they'll show like the Dodgers game, because I remember my granddad, he told me back in the day before like the Marlins came, they used to always show like the Dodgers game because that was like the best team. That's what everybody watched down here at the time because, you know, being from the South and like seeing that the Dodgers had, you know, majority of the black players played for that team at the time. So it was like growing up, even my generation, like we see why people like certain teams. Like for me, I like the Dodgers too, except when they play the Marlins, you know what I'm saying?
Okay, but I'll take that.
But
take that.
And then when it came to hockey, I love my Panthers, but also was like a Red Wings fan. Basketball, you know, once again, I grew up a Lakers fan because of the Kobe and Shaq, because Shaq was like my favorite player.
Okay.
But as I got older,
yeah,
but as I got older and then, you know, Steph Curry came in the league, like I've been a Golden State fan.
No.
But even before then, the year the Heat beat the Mavericks, the following year they got upset by Golden State. You remember they was like the 8th seed.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like the first time in a while. And I love that because that was that same year the Heat, we got swept by the Bulls. So that's when I started liking Golden State, because I ain't want Dallas to go back to the finals, because
right.
they they record was crazy. They had almost, they had like 65 wins, first seed in the West, you know. And then, so yeah, and then of course college sports, you know, I went to FIU, but, you know, I grew up a Hurricanes fan, so.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So that's where it's at.
I'm a Bruin all the way. And it, which is funny because I grew up a USC fan.
I hear that a lot from LA.
My whole life, and I wanted to go to USC so bad. And the way I got to UCLA is actually funny, because I hated on them. I've never, you know, I grew up around it so much. I didn't have any reason other than one of my friends in middle school was a Jason Capono fan, and we talk about him all the time. So I would just hate.
He was good on the Heat.
So I like I mentioned, I was up for Air Force ROTC, the scholarship.
Right.
And I, the whole time I wanted to go to USC, which obviously is a very expensive private school, and I did not grow up with money at all.
Wait, so, USC is a private school?
Yeah.
I didn't know. I thought it was public. So yeah. UCLA is public?
UCLA is public, yeah.
Nah, so that...
USC is real expensive. Wow. So I had my interview. The closest ROTC office where I could have my interview for my scholarship was at UCLA. It was just closest to where I lived. So I went there, and the interview went great, and the guy was like, okay, so here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
I can submit, you know, my feedback on your interview to this committee, and we'll see how much they give you to go to USC.
Right.
Or you can come to UCLA for free, and I'll give you the scholarship on the spot. And I was like, done, I'm a Bruin. Like, you're going to pay for my college? Done. But it's funny, you know, throughout the experience, it was an amazing experience, a great school. You know, we struggle in football a lot, but
basketball that was good.
For some great basketball years, yeah. I'm the same year as Russ, so I had a little bit of glory in March Madness with him and Kevin Love and stuff. So it was fun. It was
Kevin Love, Russ, what's the Russ book?
Yeah, I know
Drew Holiday was out there.
Yep. Yeah. So I got a lot of Bruin pride. But, yeah, let's just not talk about football.
Yeah, because y'all, I mean, y'all beat Washington State. I was surprised that I was.
Yeah, that was a crazy game.
Yeah, because I love college football, and like my best friend.
You didn't see Oklahoma.
Yeah, but my best friend and my wife, you know, they'll tell you, even my mom, they'll tell you, like, you know, I love college football. Like, college basketball, it's like, I'm more of a football first. Okay. I love sports in general, but football, I can watch D3 play all day, you know what I'm saying? But yeah. When I was watching the game, this man had 10, it was the Washington State quarterback had like 10 touchdowns. And then the freshman, I think he's a freshman, right? Or second year, the UCLA quarterback, he had some crazy numbers too. But I'm like, yeah, y'all won, you know? But,
yeah, I don't know how he pulled that out. I actually didn't even get to see it. I can't remember what might have been in a movie or something. Like it was one of those like we just give up on the season. I'm actually going to a game in a few weeks, but it was not a priority watch for us. And I think I was in the movie. I think we went to see It.
Oh yeah, me and my wife seen It the other day. It's real good.
Oh my god, it scared me so bad. we got out and I looked at Bleacher Report and I was just like, no way. Of course, like the one time we don't watch is this crazy comeback and we actually pull it off.
But yeah, but to get back to that, because I didn't know that USC was the private school, but that's the reasons why I didn't go to UM, because UM was a private school and UM, you had to get, like, I remember when I was just about to, when I was a senior in high school, and I was like, I want to go to UM because, you know, that's everybody's dream school here. It's either UM, Florida State, or UF.
Yeah.
And when I was looking up, like, the prices, you had to get, like, 2 or 3 financial aids. It was, like, crazy, like, this. I'm like...
It's crazy. I don't know how people do it. And, I mean, obviously in L.A. there's a lot of money, so a lot of people go there. But, I don't know. I'm an advocate for public school, affordable education.
Yeah, that's why...
And it's funny, even in high school, I was like a big overachiever, and I felt like I was probably, I honestly felt like I was too good for community college. Like, I felt like I had earned the right to go to a 4-year degree or 4-year university. Like, man, I'm such a huge advocate for community college now.
Yeah, because
you know, make the road a little easier for yourself. Like, I'd be all for it.
Yeah,
public school, community college, you know, it's a whole different perspective as you get older.
Yeah, like, you know, that's the one thing I don't regret, because I ain't gonna lie, I was mad too, like, when I went to community college. Well, it's they colleges now, like, down here in Florida, they trying to make majority of the community colleges now. But,
okay.
At the time, like, the college was just, they just transformed it to a college, but I was still, man, I'm like, it's still a community college. Like, I wanted to go to this school, that school, because my dream schools was Florida, because it was Miami, because, you know, grew up a Miami fan. Florida, because I love, you know, the education and stuff. And mm-hmm. like, right now, I think they told UF trying to be like an Ivy League school now or something like that.
Really?
Yeah, they're trying to, like, change, like, you know, they hold, like, education.
Interesting.
Thing. And then I was wanting to go to Oregon, you know.
Yeah, Oregon's a good school.
Oregon, like, as far as, like, the sports, because I'm doing my doctorate right now in sports administration.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Thank you, but...
I'll see you.
But, like, when I learned so much about Oregon and, like, how Nike was over there and stuff like that, like, man, I want to go there because it'd be a great opportunity for me to you know, get closer to the industry. But when I went to FIU, study sports management and park and recreation, because it's very big down here, and then I'm at St. Thomas, I got my master's, and I'm working my doctorate at St. Thomas, you get to realize that, you know, coming from, even if you're not from a big city, but coming from, like, a state, like Florida or California, Texas, New York, you know, like, it's a lot of stuff that be going on, especially sports-wise. You know, like, down here, we got, what, 3 professional football teams, 2 basketball, 2 hockey, 2 baseball. Then you got the bowl games, and then on top of that, you got, you know, it's like every other year we hosting, like, a Super Bowl or, like, the National Championship. Right. And then you got the Daytona 500, the Homestead Speedway, which is the championship, but they gonna change it for next year. I think it's, like, one of the first few races, but it's a lot going on. So it's just, like, especially in the sports industry, like, it's so much opportunity, and, you know, it's a lot of competition, but it's just so much opportunity. But
yeah, it makes sense. I've never really thought about that, but yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Florida's a great place to be for that.
Yeah. So you playing basketball now?
Yeah, so I've played basketball my whole life. Up until maybe about a year and a half ago,
mm-hmm.
I still played, like, 4 times a week.
Okay.
Like, pickup leagues, whatever I could. I had to slow down. I have, like, a back issue and just time, you know, like, you go to play pickup, which is, you know, just fun, but it's like 3 hours between, if you don't get on right away,
right,
and win, you're screwed. So sometimes just to play, like, 3 pickup games, you're there forever. It's a priority shift in my life of, you know, I gotta put my business first and other things first. So right now I just play 2 nights a week. I play in a men's league, actually, on Tuesday nights. Yeah. And then I play in a co-ed league with, like, all my best friends, my boyfriend. It's just super fun on Sundays. And then I got into flag football for the first time. This is my second season now, playing on Saturdays. So, you know, it keeps me busy, it keeps me active. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, I'm trying to do the same thing, like, you know, with my wife and my homeboys and them, like, you know, like, I was talking to this my last episode, because I'm 27, about to be 28. And I remember when I was younger, a lot of people used to tell me, like, man, once you go over 25, you're young, but you're not young like you used to. So
yeah.
I was just like, man, like, it's true what they say. Like, 10 years ago when I was 17 years old, like, I can go to sleep 3 o'clock in the morning, wake up at 7, 8 with no problem.
It's definitely true. Mm-hmm. So I'm 30, about to be 31, and I probably felt like my absolute best in terms of, you know, just being in shape and feeling good in my body at probably around 27, 28.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm still in shape. I'm still
can
still get active and stuff, but I got a few more aches and pains. I have like the lower back of like a 65-year-old woman. I have arthritis in my lower back, like for real, which is crazy. And I'm just trying to manage it. For several years, I got real into like powerlifting. Mm. I still love to lift, and I'm in the gym all the time, but I was really into it, like trying to lift really, really heavy and squat and deadlift. I love to deadlift, but I can't do that anymore. It's just too bad for my back. So
yeah,
I adjust kind of the ebbs and flows, and you know, you find new outlets, physical outlets, but you know, sports is the best part. So there's nothing like just playing, you know. I can sit on the treadmill for an hour and I'll lose my damn mind, but I can go for an hour and it's like therapy.
Yeah, that's
all different things.
Yeah, that's a thing too. Like, you know, I'm the same way. Like, I have to like be able to play a sport or something like that. Like to not only know I'm losing weight, but also I'm having fun with it. You know, and
mm-hmm.
I know.
Yeah, there's just nothing like it.
Yeah.
You know. It's the best.
So we have a couple more questions before we end the podcast.
Sure.
One of the questions I like to ask is people top five, you know, and you say you love music and stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't know what type of music, what genre do you listen to the most?
R&B and soul.
Okay.
So
you have like a top five, you know, R&B artists that you listen to day to day, or like all time?
Yeah. Well, I mean, okay, I don't know the top five off of my head, but number one is Stevie Wonder. He's my all time favorite artist.
Okay.
And then number two maybe would be Lauryn Hill.
Okay, yeah.
That's
the GOAT.
Shoot. Those ones I know for sure. Beyond that, it gets a little tougher to pick. There's so many artists I listen to all the time. I love, you know, I really love neo soul and like D'Angelo, like, you know, Erykah Badu, Jill Scott. But I also love 90s R&B, Aaliyah, Brandy. Man, it's tough. I don't know that I could do a whole. These are my top five off the top of my head. I just know my top two. Yeah, I love John Legend.
John Legend.
I love this like kind of new wave of R&B, like alt R&B, I'll call it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Daniel Caesar.
Yeah, Daniel Caesar.
Brand Faiyaz, like a lot of those new
hers. I love her. She reminds me of
Mayo.
Yeah,
there's a bunch of them.
Yeah, I believe this is the first top list of R&B artists I've done on the podcast.
Really?
Yeah, because Lauryn Hill, people, you know, Lauryn Hill, she's a triple threat, so, you know, she's R&B, soul, and hip-hop,
sure.
So she always been people's top five, you know, but when it comes to, like, a true R&B top five or top list, like, this is the first time, so it's different.
Yeah, that's, I grew up listening to all the different types of music. My father's a professional musician, a blues guitarist, and I was exposed to what I'll call white people music. a lot of blues and stuff too, but like folk and singer songwriters and classic rock and metal and punk. And I'm probably the only one in my family that really went the other direction and love soul, love R&B. I love hip hop too and rap, but R&B has really got my heart.
Yeah, man. Everybody got they style, you know, mm-hmm. like a cup of tea. But last question, you know, where do you see yourself out of 10 years from now?
Okay. I see myself being a boss.
Right.
You know, a prosperous, really fulfilling business, in which I'm helping other people achieve their dreams and reach their goals. Mm-hmm. I see myself with some little kids running around, playing sports, driving me crazy, making life more fulfilling.
Right.
I see the cool thing that I love about life is that it is never anywhere near what you expected, and I think that's what's the most beautiful. So 5 years ago from now, or 5 years ago, my life was totally different. I never would have imagined where I'm at now.
Right.
And so I kind of like that I can't be sure where the next 5 to 10 years will take me. I think that's the magic of life. So, you know, hopefully the business part, hopefully the kids part, but, you know, we'll see what life has to bring me. I'm going to be grateful for it.
Yeah, that's one thing about life. You know, it's very... it's very unpredictable, but you know, like I said with myself, like I never pictured myself even having a podcast, a platform where I talk to different people, you know, so it's kind of crazy. But you have any shout outs before we go?
Yeah, I want to say shout out to this universe for giving me all this positivity, love in my life. My mama for making me. Oh, my family. I got a huge family. And my best friend, Lisa. My boyfriend, Mark. Keep me sane every day. And my girl, Lyric. One of my partners. Amazing designer. Super boss, CEO. We partner a lot on great work, and shout out to her.
That's what's up, and you know, once again, thank you for coming on the show. I hope we have more, you know, engagements, conversations. Don't forget about your boy, you know.
Of course not.
And I tell people
thank
that
you
all
so
the
much.
I tell everybody that to come on the show. You know, if y'all got, you know, weddings, etc. You know, new stuff going on, just let me know. I'll come. Me and my wife will come.
Hey, love it.
And yeah, but this has been your boy DJ Anonymous with Sports Biz Music, the podcast, episode 106 with Miss Liz Marie, and we out.
We out.